I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Take me through a week. Tom Candiotti, the knuckleballer. Tom Candiotti, when you were a conventional pitcher, getting ready for that, let's say, every fifth day. You guys, you pitchers, we don't pay much attention to you, but you have your in-between starts, things you do. And it's one day, it's running, it's band work, it's whatever you do. Was there a difference for you preparing your preparation as a knuckleballer versus a contemporary type pitcher? Was there any difference?
Yeah, there was. When I became a knuckleball pitcher, you know, I threw so much more because it was important to me every day that I got there. I never took a day off from throwing and to develop the feel, because sometimes, you know, you have that thought like, oh man, what if I don't have it today? I'm facing the Reds.
Right.
What if I
right.
don't have it? I got to make sure I have this pitch every single day. I don't care if it's playing catch with a buddy or just throwing, you know, maybe 10 of them on a mound or something like
right.
that. But every single day I'd have to play catch, and I'd have to always also make sure my nails were right, you know, because the worst thing I start getting is I got a little bit older, was, you know, nail care became really important to me because I cracked nails. I gripped the ball really hard. I really got my index finger and my second finger really in there. And it seemed like right after that strike, the balls got a little harder, but my nails broke all the time. And so I'd have to go down to the nail salon, and they put these things called acrylics on them. So it looked really weird, like, you know, they just didn't look like real nails. They looked like they were like painted over, kind of like with a plastic thing or something like that. But it kept them from breaking. And that's the only way I could really throw the ball, because I put so much pressure in there, you know, where, you know, some guys like Charlie didn't have quite as much pressure. We compared grips, you know, all the time. Yeah. I had a million questions for him. And same with Negro. But for some reason, for me to take the spin off the ball, I really had to get my nails like really in there and then let it go. You know, especially early in my career when I was more of a pitcher that threw a knuckleball, that was my out pitch. You know, when I got two strikes, then I'm going to let this knuckleball go and I don't care where it goes.
Right.
But then they taught me that, look, that's counterproductive. You know, you have to throw one, you know, hopefully just wiggles up there a little bit, learn how to change speeds with it just a little bit. So when you throw your duds, maybe the timing's off a little bit for a hitter. Maybe he's a little bit out in front of it, or you get a cheap foul ball or maybe a pop-up or something like that. So learn how to change speeds, learn how to throw strikes, take some of the movement out of it. But every once in a while, you can go ahead and let that one go when you're 0-2 and you don't really care about where
it's going. You just want to completely embarrass me. We talked about your curveball, and that's why you were different. You know, I had Charlie on the podcast a week ago, and we talked about Charlie was kind of a guy where he was living and dying with it. He didn't have a secondary pitch. It's like, Booney, 2-0, you're getting a knuckleball. 0-2, you're getting a knuckleball with me. You know, once in a while, Charlie'd zip a heater in there if he thought you weren't looking for it. But More time than not, it was not. With you, it was different because you would mix in that curveball and you had that secondary pitch, which was a good pitch, not an 80-mile-an-hour heater, but you had that legit curveball that you could flip in when you thought you needed a strike. Because it seemed to me, if my memory serves me right, you were pretty accurate with that curveball.
Yeah, I mean, that really was my go-to pitch always, even before I threw the knuckleball. You know, I had a good curveball that, you know, I could change speeds with it, and I could drop it in there any time. I didn't mind throwing it 3-2. I didn't mind throwing it 3-1 to get myself back in the count. 2-0, I go right to the curveball. I had that much confidence in that pitch. But ultimately, when the game was on the line, then it was going to be knuckleball. You know, if you're going to beat me, I'm not going to lose on a curveball. I'm not going to lose on my fastball. You're going to have to hit a knuckleball to beat me. And if you do, you know, I'll tip my hat to you. You know, but certain guys, and you were probably one of them, that, all right, you know, why is he always not swinging at my knuckleball? You know, you just seemed like you were just sitting on a curveball. And then one time I threw a curveball and you knocked it out of the park.
I was a
curveball.
Believe me, because I think I took Wakefield deep, R.A. Dickey, and it's complete luck. You know how the knuckleball is. It's like if you throw a good one, I don't care who you are, the greatest of the greats. If you throw your good one, we're not going to square it up. That's just the way it is. So with you, I thought, why am I going to battle him in that knuckleball? Because he's going to embarrass me. He's going to throw one of his good ones. He's going to drop out of the zone. I'm going to swing and miss it. So I thought maybe that great knuckleball will be a ball. And if I don't look for that, and I just look at the top of where your release point is for that curveball. And if I get that, I know if I'm looking for it and Tommy throws it to me, I got a chance. But if he throws me that good knuckleball, I probably got about a 10% chance at best that it's slow pitch softball now. It's basically, right. You know, swing where you think it's going to land. So I did with you. I just said, screw it. If he throws me three great knuckleballs, I'm probably going to have a seat and hopefully I can manipulate a curveball out of him. The problem I didn't do with guys like a Trevor Hoffman who just had that unbelievable changeup. The mistake I made with him was I kept sitting on the changeup. Because I thought I can't continue to get embarrassed by this changeup that looks like a fastball. So I'd sit on the changeup. Then Trevor started throwing me, get me over fastballs for strike one. I'm going, oh, man. You know, when we're buddies and I'm looking at him, I didn't like that at all. But, yeah, you know, that was
funny, too, with switch hitters. So this happened with Bobby Bonilla. It also happened with Carlos Beltran. So Beltran, one game, starts off left-handed. And I strike him out on knuckleballs, right? Great, whatever. He comes up his next at bat, and he's hitting right-handed. And I said, okay, well, I threw him three curveballs, struck him out. Next at bat, he comes up left-handed again. And Bobby Bonilla used to tell me, he goes, look, I'm going to hit right-handed off you because right now I have a good stroke going on the left side, and I'm not about to let you mess it up. And that's what he used to say.
Did you ever have to get in the box against, as a hitter, against a knuckleball?
Yeah, against Wake.
Oh, and so now you know what it was like.
Yeah, it was funny. I said, oh, man, this is going to be great. I went up there, first pitch, you know, is a knuckleball. I swung so hard. I was going to try to hit a home run. I swung so hard, the ball went about like 6 feet in front of the plate. And I was laughing. He was laughing. I mean, everyone was laughing all the way down the line. You know, I almost killed myself swinging so hard. That was something. You know, another funny story with Charlie is you remember Kevin Gross?
Without a doubt.
Okay, so Kevin Gross,
big curveball.
Yeah, good fastball. You know, he was one of my buddies with the Dodgers.
Right.
And he's one of the guys that I would play catch with like every day. He wanted to throw his knuckleball and stuff. So I always played knuckleball catch with him. So the Marlins are coming in town and he's going to pitch against Charlie Huff. Now, Charlie's like 45 years old at the time. Right. And so I said, you got to throw Charlie a knuckleball. And he goes, oh, no, I don't know if I can do that. I go, he's not going to hit the ball out of the ballpark. OK, he's 45 years old, you know. And so, you know, Charlie comes up. Nobody's on base. You know, Kevin looks in the dugout and I'm going, yeah, throw it now. Right. And so I'll be darned. He throws Charlie Huff a knuckleball. and it comes out and it hits Charlie right in the helmet. And I never laughed so hard. I lost it. I just lost it. You know, Kevin's down, Charlie's cracking up, you know, and Charlie's going like, what are you doing? You know? And so I asked Charlie that the other day when I was talking to him. I said, do you remember facing Kevin Gross and he threw you a knuckleball? And he goes, why did he do that?
So it's we're just messing around.
He was messing around. You know, everyone wants to throw a knuckleball.
How about the, okay. It's now I'm really interested in this mental side of the game. All of us are mentally crazy people. Guys that play in the big leagues. We just are. In between, you said you always had to throw because you always had to make sure you had it. Does that grind on you? Like, okay, you're starting on Thursday and all right, I'm going to go out and have a little catch today on Tuesday. I ain't got it. It's not working. Is that weighing on you? Like, hopefully I got it tomorrow. Hopefully I got it tomorrow. And then tomorrow comes, you warm up a little bit. You don't have it. Now you go in, it's your start day. You're down to the bullpen getting ready. How good of a grip did you have on what the outcome was going to be on a given day by the pregame, warming up before the start? Did you have a pretty good idea how it was going to go, or were you fooled like the rest of us? Sometimes I had unbelievable batting practices where I felt like, get me out of here. I'm too good today. And book it. I usually went 0 for 4 that night because I felt too good. Explain to me in the bullpen, getting ready for a game, the range of thoughts that went through your brain because of the knuckleball you had that day.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Man, you nailed it. I mean, it weighed on me heavily, not knowing if I'm going to have a good knuckleball that day or not. You know, is it going to be a 2-inning day and I give up 8 runs, or is it going to be an 8-inning day and I give up 2 runs? You know, what's it going to be today? And that's where I relied on being a pitcher. You know, if I don't have my knuckleball to start that game, you know what? I'm going to try to get through the first inning. I know everyone's going to be looking for a knuckleball. I don't have it. I'm not going to force it. I'm going to come in with curveballs and try to throw a little cutter and, you know, once try to surprise somebody with a fastball until I start developing the feel of the knuckleball. And sometimes that would usually come back to me. For me, when I was able to throw a good curveball, it seemed like the knuckleball would follow. You know, it's the same mechanics, the same everything. You know, it's like you probably heard Charlie say it many times. It's throwing a knuckleball is like an over-exaggerated game of catch. You know, it's like catch plus. And so I just kind of tamed myself down a little bit, and where I was able to throw enough to get that feel. If I had a side workout and it was garbage, all right, I'd go in to get away from it for a little bit. And then I'd come out, I'd find somebody else and play catch with them until I go, oh, there it is. But I'd have to have that feel every single day. I'd have to have that feel. I always questioned myself, you know, whether, you know, it's that good or not. You know, it's different when you have a fastball and you're throwing, you know, upper 90s and stuff like that. You know, guys can still hit that. It's just about, you know, putting the ball, you know, where you need to put it. With a knuckleball, you know, I always looked at the catcher, like right in the mask. And that's where I tried to throw it. And that ball would either go down right, go down left, or go down. And once in a while, you get that little circular that would go up there. But for the most part, you know, I was in that triangle for the most part. But you don't want that thing to spin, you know, because spin is like, especially if it's side spin or back spin, you know, that's when it looks like the ball to Wakefield through to your brother. You know, it's just going to back up. It's just going to go a long ways. You know, as soon as you let go of it, you know, this is going to be ugly. You know, not too many guys hit a good knuckleball, but I had to have that feeling, like when I left the park that day, that, yeah, I got it. It's almost like you have to keep reassuring yourself. So it was a lot different, you know, early in my career. You know, it was like, all right, I, curveball, whatever, you know, I'll manipulate, try to get ground balls, try to get whatever. But throwing a knuckleball, if I don't have it, you know, it's I'm going to have to battle with my other stuff till it comes to me. And sometimes that's not a good thing.
Yeah, no, you're right, though. I mean, we all do through our journey. You know, as a hitter, I've got to have a defense. When my swing is just completely off, I'm not seeing spin, I'm not seeing anything, I have to have an emergency position to go to where I can at least compete today. I might not go 3 for 4 with a couple homers, but I've got to find a way to battle and put this ball in play today because I ain't got it. We learn that as time goes on. As a golfer, I think about this all the time, Candy. A couple years ago, and I hate saying the word, but I got the shanks. And we were at a celebrity event, and I had a little bit I was playing. I forget who I was playing with, but we had a little bit of a gallery. And you know when you shank the first one, it's like nobody, everybody pretends they didn't see it. Then you do it again, and it's like now all of a sudden you got them. And I always thought to myself, I couldn't imagine being a tour player, getting a case of the shanks on a Saturday or a Sunday. What do you do? And I'm sure for them, they have an emergency swing they go to that can fix that. And just today, I haven't got my good stuff, but I've just got to ping it around the course to survive. As a hitter, I did it. And I'm sure as you matured and got more experience as a pitcher, okay, it's emergency mode. I know where to go right now, and I've got a fighting chance. I might not pitch my best game, but I'll give my team a chance to win.
Yeah, you're on the money with that. Early in your career, when you're not sure if you quite belong or if you happen to have, you know, 2, 3, 4 bad outings or subpar outings in a row, you might not be in the major leagues.
Right.
And so that was always wearing on you. Well, God, am I good enough to be up here? Are they going to let me go? You know, you have all these things going through your mind. And then as you get a little bit more established and you know that you're not going to get sent down to the minor leagues or released or anything like that, you have that leeway where you can relax a little bit. And that's when it seems like you kind of take off, probably as a hitter too.
Yeah.
And also as a pitcher, you know, they said, look, you got 10 starts, just go out there and show us what you can do. Then, you know, that is such a relief for a guy knowing that, you know, he's just not going to get sent down to AAA the next day after a bad outing.
Yeah, I think about that throughout my career, and I've got a son-in-law of mine now is a shortstop for the Oakland A's, and I talked to him about it. Breaking in, establishing yourself. It's so nice once you get to that point where you don't have to show up to spring training and put up numbers. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Of course, I'm not going to lie to you. When I was, you know, late in my career, you know, 14 year veteran, I still want to get a hit every at bat. I don't care where we are in a backfield in a B game. I'd be lying if I said it didn't matter. I want to get a hit, but it wasn't essential to me making the team. I could go in and get my swing ready because I knew April 1st is when it counted. So you're right. Once you establish yourself, it's much easier to get your work in and prepare because you know you're going to be there when the bell rings.